Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host for the next 30 minutes. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone from the literary world. My guest today is Susan Burleson. She has just published a very unique book, The Tented Field. Good morning, Susan, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Simon. Thank you for having me.
Maybe we can start with a little biography. Who is Susan Burleson?
Well, I grew up in Dallas with three sisters and both of my parents. My father was an OBGYN in Dallas. We were raised with a fairly conservative, traditional family. You know, the women are supposed to get married and have kids. But we had a lot of fun, too. We got to do things. We had a property out in East Texas, and we got to do things that most people don't do, like, you know, play with dynamite. and shoot. I grew up shooting. I carried a gun around on our property when I was 10 years old. It's been very interesting. Both of my parents have passed, but they gave us all a real love of history, and they've always tied in things from our past for us to know about and enjoy. I live in southwest Fort Worth right now with my current husband, and he has two kids, and I have two kids, and we have three grandchildren between us.
Oh, quite the family.
Yes.
The Tented Field is a very unique and very personal book. Tell us how it came into being, and maybe give our listeners an idea of what it's about.
All right. The Tented Field is a collection of letters written during the Civil War between members of my family. Most of them are from Jim or James or Bud. They get called him Bud quite frequently. While he was in the war, Robert, his younger brother, joined him in the war, and there are letters from him. And then there's his parents, both of them wrote, and his sisters, and I believe there's an aunt in there also, and a few friends. For some reason, all these letters were saved, and my grandfather came across them again in the early 60s. I was like 10 years old, and he started transcribing them. So he had to decipher these letters that were over 100 years old by then already. And he typed them on a manual typewriter with carbon copies. And then around 2000, or actually all my life I've been fascinated with them, I've read them, but around 2000 I decided, you know, these need to be out where people can read them and not just sitting in the vaults at UT. So I looked into ways to get them published and came up with iUniverse. And so I spent 5 years transcribing everything, you know, in my spare time, and went with iUniverse and published them.
I think they make for fascinating reading. It's a shame that, for the most part, we only have one side of the conversation. It would be fascinating to have both, although the descriptive writing style of the time does give us a pretty solid idea of what the other side of the conversation was. Did you make any attempt to search around and see if any of the other side's letters were still in existence?
From looking at the letters that we have, I assume that the rest had been lost or destroyed. I remember James commenting in one of his letters that Bobby had carried around one of the letters in his clothes and had sweat on them, and so it was fairly illegible. And he was very disappointed because he had wanted to read it too. So most of the other letters, I assume, were you know, just lost, destroyed, or whatever. But there are lots of replies You know, he says, and your letter dated the 5th before you said such and such, and then he replied to what was said.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's relatively easy to figure out the, you know, what the, you know, the other side of the conversation was. But it would just be so wonderful to have the complete set. I think it would cast a really interesting picture of the period.
Yes, I agree.
The information about battles and troop movements was interesting, but I have to admit that my personal favorite was the minutia of day-to-day life that makes its way into the letters. The price of a spring chicken, the cost of breakfast, how much you can get for a bale of cotton. Most books on the Civil War never mention these little details, and yet I think they are very important.
Yes, they offer information that most of the time we don't have before. I thought it was interesting they were talking about getting leather to make shoes for the Negroes and that kind of minutia. That was very interesting.
Right. And the other thing I saw progressing over time, although the term inflation is never used in the letters, clearly America went through a period of great inflation. I seem to recall in an early letter that a spring chicken could be got for the princely sum of 25 cents. However, a couple of years later, the price had jumped to $1.25.
Yeah, they did have a lot of inflation. Yes, you're absolutely right.
In some ways, the Tented Field reminded me a little about another great Civil War era book. It's written by a publisher, a friend of mine, Don Bracken. He produced something called The Words of War. Don took, I think it's something like 13 major conflicts and reprinted the newspaper articles of the day, one from the New York Times and one from the Charleston Mercury. In other words, one North, one South. In almost every case, it was hard to believe that the people were talking about the same battle. I think spin is the word we use for it today. And I noticed spin in some of these letters, a very Confederate spin. Did you feel that?
Yes. I noticed that James said several times, don't listen to what the newspapers say. Just whatever I tell you is going to be accurate, that the newspapers will blow it out of proportion or not report it at all. And he wanted to be sure that they were getting the right information.
Hmm. Writing a book's one thing. Selling the darn thing is an entirely different beast. What are you doing to promote it?
Well, mostly at this moment, because I've only had the book like a month. We're letting, of course, friends and families know about it. I've put it on Facebook. We have contacts who are in the reenactment groups that we plan to see. Of course, Civil War reenactment. We're planning on working with them. Actually, I was thinking of offering, a donation for every book that they sold if I provided them with books. I know that they'd be interested. We looked into some of the Civil War type magazines, thinking that we might advertise. I find the advertising to be quite expensive. And at this point, I don't see that I could do that.
Right. What sort of general feedback are you getting from readers?
Well, you gave me a wonderful review. My friends and family are, of course, all being very supportive and saying it's great and interesting. And my sisters have all bought extra books to give to their other family members. I've had no bad reviews so far.
Well, I don't see how you could possibly get a bad review. I mean, it's a slice of American history.
I tried really hard to keep it just the letters. And working with iUniverse, they wanted me to make it more like a story, you know, to put narrative in between the letters and all that. But to me, it's all about the letters, that they stand on their own. They provide information. They're interesting. They give you a look at how the people thought and felt and how they were educated, because James was quite obviously well-educated, but his sister Susie was not. I mean, her English wasn't very good, and her grammar wasn't good. I was surprised by the difference.
Indeed. I mean, for any student of the Civil War, or just any student of history, it is wonderful to read those letters and look at the different styles, and you're right. Clearly, they're written by people with varying degrees of literacy, if you will.
Right. I found the memoirs of the Civil War. I mean, the prisoner of war camp to be incredible. And again, and I mentioned at the beginning of the book that they don't complain about their situation, that what it is what it is. Now, yeah, I imagine he is trying to protect the family some and make it sound like, you know, they're just out camping. But I think they weren't as inclined to complain about situations as perhaps we are.
Are you trying to say that times have changed?
Oh, well, yeah, of course.
Going back to promotion and marketing, mm-hmm. I really feel that the Tented Field should appeal to any Civil War student or scholar, particularly those interested in the Confederate side.
Yeah.
I live in Mississippi, and for example, there's a very strong Sons of the Confederacy movement, or at least I think that's what they're called. In fact, I spoke at one of their meetings about some Civil War books that I was promoting. Have you considered taking that route to try and garner some interest?
Yes. In fact, I have considered sending a book to, say, Sons of the Confederacy or some of the Civil War magazines. You know, if they would just do a review on the book, that would be great. And again, the reenactment people, mainly because we have the contact with them already.
Right. I will give you some advice. I work with a lot of authors. I do a lot of reviews and interviews, and sending books blind often does not work. You're wasting the postage.
Okay. Thank you for the advice.
Oh, I'm serious. In fact, only yesterday, a book arrived all the way from Germany. It's actually a book that I wouldn't mind reading. But I have no clue who sent it, why they sent it, how they got my address. And, you know, I searched high and low in all of my emails, and I can find no mention of this book anywhere. Now, you know, so in my situation, yeah, I'll probably read it at some point, but It won't be today, it won't be tomorrow. You know, I've talked to some other people that are serious reviewers, and one magazine in particular springs to mind. They get something like 100 unsolicited books a week. And of those, they review maybe 2.
Right.
Yeah. From an author's standpoint, I really think that sending blind is not a good idea. Much better to reach out and touch them personally.
Right. I agree.
Do you have a website?
Not at this time. I am looking into building one. My husband has a website he has a side business called A Laser Engraving, and the book is on there. And it's also available through Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Yeah, another piece of sage advice. In today's society, the internet is king. Get yourself a website. You can do it for virtually nothing. It doesn't have to be very flashy, but I think it's important to have that presence on the web. You know, without it, a lot of your marketing, you're missing a lot of potential marketing potential. Now that you're a bona fide author, are you planning another book?
I would be interested in writing another book now that I've had the experience and probably wouldn't feel so daunted by it. I actually don't know what I would be writing now. I really like haiku.
That's
kind of funny to go from a Civil War letter to haiku, but I've been writing haiku, and I thought, I could do that too.
Sure. The publishing industry is a bit strange, but with the wonderful world of print-on-demand, I mean, basically, you can write anything you want.
You're right, and it doesn't matter if anybody likes it or not.
Right.
If you're willing to spend the money, you've got a book.
Oh, exactly. Do you still have all of the original letters?
The original letters are at the University of Texas in Austin, and there are archives, and they're restricted because of their age, you know. They can't be handled very much. I did recently go, I saw them when I was young and looked at them, and recently I went down and looked at the copies we have of the letters and was absolutely awed by the transcription my grandfather did, because those letters were not easily read.
Oh, I imagine. You know, a lot of time has passed, and paper does tend to, degrade over time, as does the ink.
Uh-huh. That's right. There were a few other things in there. I know that when my grandfather pulled out the letters, he also had a flag that was with the Mississippi regiment that James and Bobby were in. And my parents took that flag to Mississippi and donated it to them, thinking that, you know, they would appreciate it a lot more than Texas would. But it was in Mississippi.
The reason I asked about the original letters is one incarnation of this book that I could really see, it would be a coffee table book, nice and glossy, nice and large, the originals on one side of the page, the transcribed copy on the other, maybe even a map showing the journey that these people took and the battles that they fought in. I think it would just make for a wonderful visual.
I think you're right. I think it'd be great. And it's something I'm going to look into now that you've given me the idea.
I found that reading the letters, that there was a huge amount of normalcy amidst absolute chaos. And I'm wondering if it was an attempt by the sons to try and make their parents feel better, you know, oh no, this is no big thing, you know, we're just out camping, we're, you know, we have plenty to eat, we're safe. What's your opinion?
I think you're right, because I know Jim says a few times that, oh, he's fatter than he ever was. That's really hard to believe, living on bacon and cornbread. Yeah, I think you're right. But perhaps it wasn't as bad as we thought it would be, especially in the beginning, because it sounds like they had good rations in the beginning.
Right, but things definitely went downhill as the war progressed. You know, and even Jim's letters reveal that. You know, going back to the inflation, you know, there's one great letter which I did chuckle about. He needed breakfast, and they were going to charge 75 cents. And he had his breakfast, but didn't eat any bacon. And so the lady wanted to, give him a discount, I think
right.
it was, of 25 cents. But,
yes.
and he insisted, no, you know, the price was 75 cents, I'm going to pay my 75 cents. And I think it was something like, well, you know, I'll keep the 25 cents on escrow. You know, you come back and I'll give you a gallon of milk or something.
I think she gave him extra milk to make up for no bacon. And,
right.
And it's interesting to me that they went into town to get breakfast rather than eat in camp.
Yes, and that makes you wonder about just how good the rations were.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, that gives you genuine pause for thought. You know, maybe there wasn't quite as much food as Jim would have his parents believe.
Right.
The final part of the book concerns life as a prisoner of war. I found them absolutely riveting.
Yes.
The notes were penned in the prison camp. How did they make their way to the family?
Well, Jim did not die in the prison camp. Bobby's the one who died. He died of dysentery.
Oh, okay.
He died in the hospital. He actually had tried to go home, and because it says it in one of the letters, that he tried to go home, but he couldn't, so he came back to the hospital. Please send somebody for him. But he never made it home.
Oh, right. So the letters were hand-carried out after the event.
Yes, and then Jim went home. He was finally released.
Do you know much about Jim's life after the Civil War?
Well, they moved to Dallas, and he was a lawyer in Dallas. And apparently they did quite well. And my grandfather and father were both doctors in Dallas. Jim, as far as I know, that's about all I know about him, that he had the one leg and he was a lawyer.
Wow. And basically the family has remained in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Yes, yes. I still have a daughter living in Dallas County and another in Collin.
I was talking to my wife about the tented field, and she's lived most of her life in Mississippi and Louisiana. Obviously, I haven't. And we were trying to figure out where the family plantation actually was. Jen thinks it might have been around the Natchez or Vicksburg area. Do you have any idea?
I believe it was in the Natchez area, and they talk about the ship, the boats not being able to make it to Natchez and staying in the fort near there during the war, you know, when they had the blockade and boats weren't allowed up the river.
Right. Have you made any attempt to actually locate the exact property?
My parents did. When they took the Mississippi flag to Mississippi, they went and they said that they found what they believed was the area of the plantation.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I class this style of book as living history. You know, it's history as seen through the eyes of people that were there, and are absolutely riveting reading.
Thank you.
Well, our time is just about up. I do want to thank you for joining us. Is there anything else that you would like to tell us about the Tented Field?
I'd like to say, first of all, thank you so much for having me and for your interest in the book. I've been so honored by it. And, you know, I really don't feel like I wrote a book. I feel like all I did was type and publish the letters and then add just a little bit about where the battles were and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I'm really humbled by the interest and the enthusiasm that people have shown me. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely, my pleasure. The one thing I would say is that if you are going to revisit this book, I think you should include just a few more little introductions, if you will, about the places, the economic climate, just to put it into a perspective, and then the reader would get a much better idea about the contents of the letter.
Okay.
But
I will.
It's just an idea.
I will do some research on it, huh?
Right. But
all right.
All in all, I think it's a splendid book, and I really do wish you well with sales and marketing, and your haiku book if that comes to pass.
I hope so.
Susan, it has been delightful talking to you. This is Simon Barrett, wishing everyone a wonderful Friday, and I'm sure that we will talk again soon. Goodbye.